Saturday, March 2nd, Texas Independence Day, and my celebration had been to go to bed at 9 o'clock Friday night, the most superb luxury, valued because it's so rare. Lyndon had thoughtfully had Jim Jones call me back from somewhere on his whirlwind trip to Texas and say there was no need for me to catch a plane down there. Why didn't I just meet him in Marietta, Georgia, so I could spend a leisurely evening? And then I was up early Saturday morning and out at Andrews, and on the way to Marietta, read two big sacks of Read and File. I arrived on schedule 10 minutes ahead of Lyndon's plane and was met by two ladies, the wife of the commandant of the field and the wife of one of the heads of Lockheed, who said, "We're so thrilled we're going to see Lucy and Pat and the baby." I looked at them in protest and said, "Oh, no. Lucy's busy keeping house and taking two courses at the university, and Pat's working. I don't know how that got started, but they're not coming." Just then I saw the plane landing, and the first person off was Lucy's agent. But by that time, I was being ushered over to the plane myself. Yuki led the procession down, and then came Lyndon, looking not at all like a man who had left Washington yesterday afternoon, flown to Houston and inspected the manned space flight center, making a speech to the NASA employees, gone on to an old folks' home and another speech, and then to a fundraising dinner for Jack Brooks where he made a rip-roaring speech, and then this morning back to Marietta. He was swinging along in high good spirits, and right behind him, in a short-sleeved dress without a coat and the weather in the biting 50s, was Lucy, and Patrick carrying Lynn, solemn-faced, wearing his blue coat and blue southwester hat that his granddaddy had given him for Christmas. It was a precision affair. We took our seats on a stand with probably a quorum of the Georgia delegation, Congressman Hagan and Stuckey, Senator Talmadge, Governor Maddox, and former Governor Carl Sanders, General McConnell, officials of Lockheed, and out in front, acres, about 20,000 cheering spectators. But behind us was the star of the show, the reason for our coming to Marietta. The giant CA-5, almost as long as a football field, its tail sticking up 6 stories in the air, making our speaker stand look small. And high above the enormous round black nose, two little tiny windows and the tiny pilots that directed the great thing. Lyndon made a brief speech describing the ship and our nation's pride in it. It can span the Pacific from California to Japan in a single jump. And he made a lot of generous allusions to the Georgia delegation, and especially to Carl Vinson. Seeing him was, for me, the delight of the day. He doesn't look a day older than when he left Washington. And then the great thing rolled out on the field, and the crowd roared, and Mrs. Harold Brown, the wife of the Air Force Secretary, christened the plane by pulling a cord which caused a large red and white and blue banner to drop, revealing the name Galaxy painted on the side. Lynn had watched the whole thing with solemn interest. Once, when he made a few small murmurs, Lucy took him out, but presently brought him back, quiet as a lamb again. And when it was over, we all filed off the stand, shaking hands with all the Georgians. And Lyndon took Lynn in his arms and proceeded to carefully mount into the interior of the giant plane. A truck could drive up a ramp and into one end, and clear on through and out the other, depositing its men a materiel. And so we did the same. It's like a huge barn inside, laced and ribbed with huge cables of wiring. Lynn was quite comfortable in his grandfather's arms as he carefully picked his way over the tricky flooring. And Lucy was real proud because he behaved himself so amiably. What a head start that child has had. A little past one, we left Marietta, headed for Puerto Rico, Ramey Air Force Base. Lyndon asked George to bring in the newspaper man, and soon there were about 15 grouped around him, he in his revolving chair, and some 8 or more to my right and left across the table from him. Max Frankel and Frank Cormier, I think, and Sid Davis and Forrest something, many that I didn't know. He talked and parried their questions, and it was a very interesting hour. Tom Johnson industriously took notes. There ought to be some jewels in those. I remember one statement he said when they were discussing what someone had told them about his, Lyndon's, plans. And he was describing this someone. A president does not talk to anybody much who talks to you. Those who talk to you most know the least. It was good-humored, witty, sometimes incisive, sometimes very measured words. And the same question asked over and over in an attempt to dig out an answer. I've sat in on a lot of these sessions. and never fail to find them exciting. We reached Ramey Air Force Base a little past 5 to find it in the 70s. The commanding officer and his pretty wife drove us along streets lined with palm trees, past bougainvillea and poinsettia and flamboyance, the Porterfield House, where we were to stay. It was a quite modest guest house, the large, simply furnished living room, the dining room open off it, and upstairs, 3 sparsely furnished bedrooms for Linda and me and Lucy and Pat and Lynn. There was a feeling of holiday in the air, and it was such a delight to have the surprise of Lucy and Pat and Lynn. Lennon went off, I believe, with General McConnell, taking Pat with him, and Lucy and Beryl Pickle and I toured the base in a car and went down to the beach, which, alas, was no Caneel Bay. There was an expanse of ragged, sharp coral, dark and forbidding, against which a great roaring surf pounded. There must have been a storm out at sea. Not the bravest would have ventured out into it. There was one small horseshoe of sand, and a sign that said, lifeguard on duty, a few limited hours. So we hoped for tomorrow, but Lucy, with the exuberance of 20, walked out onto the sand, and a great wave, bigger than any of the rest, came roaring in, wetting her to the hips. We went back to Porterfield House and were pleasantly lazy. There were 12 of us at dinner, the general on my right, 3 and Juanita, Jake and Beryl, and Lucy and Pat. Lyndon had one game of dominoes, but it lacked its usual cutthroat quality. Besides, at last, he was tired. So it was an early night, and I read Nicholas and Alexandra until I was sleepy.